This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strobe. U.S. forces have conducted a fifth strike against Iranian-backed Houthi rebel military sites in Yemen. The action Thursday comes as President Joe Biden acknowledged that the American and British bombardment had yet to stop the militants' attacks on vessels in the Red Sea that have disrupted global shipping. U.S. Central Command said the latest strikes destroyed two Houthi anti-ship missiles that, quote, were aimed into the southern Red Sea and prepared to launch. Biden said the U.S. would continue the strikes, even though so far they haven't stopped the Houthis from continuing to harass commercial and military vessels. The U.S. designates the Houthi rebels as a specially designated global terrorist group. The Saudi ambassador to the United States said on Thursday that talks on normalization with Israel wouldn't happen until the violence in Gaza ended and there was a pathway to statehood for the Palestinians. VOA's Kim Lewis reports.
The remarks by Princess Rima Bandar Al Sud at the World Economic Forum in Davos came after Israeli President Isaac Herzog said that normalizing ties between Israel and Saudi Arabia would be a key element of ending the war with Hamas.
The kingdom has been quite clear. While there is violence on the ground and the killing persists, we cannot talk about the next day or the day after because we have to solve the immediate.
Saudi Prince Faisal bin Farhan said that Saudi Arabia would recognize Israel as part of a larger political agreement that included a Palestinian state. Kim Lewis, VOA News.
Congress has sent President Joe Biden a short-term spending bill that would avert a looming partial government shutdown and fund federal agencies into March. The bill extends current spending levels and buys time for the two chambers to work out their differences over full year spending bills. You'll find expanded coverage of world news and events at our website, voanews.com, 24 hours a day. This is VOA News. Hunter Biden has agreed to a deposition with House Republicans, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Republicans on the House Oversight Committee want a private deposition. The president's son has been defying that, insisting on public testimony.
Republicans do not want an open process where Americans can see their tactics, expose their baseless inquiry, or hear what I have to say.
The committee now says an agreement has been reached. The deposition is set for February 28th. Republicans have been investigating Hunter Biden's overseas business dealings for over a year in a so far futile effort to connect it to his father. Ed Donahue, Washington.
The African Union, European Union, United Nations, and United States are calling for an immediate ceasefire and constructive dialogue between warring factions in Sudan. They're also calling for an end to tensions between Somalia and Ethiopia over an agreement signed with Somalia's breakaway region, Somaliland. The groups say that the two issues are threatening regional stability in the Horn of Africa. Michael Hammer, the U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, says the warring factions in Sudan should immediately end the fighting and adhere to their obligations under international humanitarian law and respect for human rights. Another state, South Carolina, bans gender-affirming care for transgender minors. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
At least 22 states have passed restrictions or bans on gender-affirming care for those under the age of 18. South Carolina was one of the few southern states without such a ban, but Wednesday their House overwhelmingly voted to approve a new bill. It would bar health professionals from performing gender transition surgeries or prescribing puberty-blocking drugs or hormone treatments for patients who are minors. People under 26 could not use Medicaid to cover the cost for such care. The bill's co-sponsor, Republican John McCravey, described transgender children as mentally disturbed and in need of protection from mutilation, while Democratic lawmakers accused Republicans of fear-mongering. Meanwhile, this week in Missouri, lawmakers are also considering a new slew of like-minded proposals. In Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine has proposed new rules that could make the state the second to restrict gender-affirming medical care for transgender adults. Major medical groups, like the American Medical Association, oppose the bans and have endorsed transgender-oriented care, saying it's safe when properly administered. I'm Jennifer King.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is planning to visit four African countries. The State Department says Blinken will go to Cape Verde, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and Angola starting Sunday for talks focused on regional security, conflict prevention, democracy promotion, and trade. Blinken's Africa trip comes as the United States is increasingly nervous about its relationships on the continent. In addition, the U.S. and China are in a battle for influence throughout Africa. For additional stories, visit voanews.com. I'm Alexis Strobe, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti, Washington. Today is Friday, January 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ugandan security places opposition leaders under house arrest as the country hosts Non-Aligned Movement Summit today, Friday.
My home is still surrounded up to now by police. So have been the homes of the Honorable Kyagulanyi Bobowine and the Lord Mayor of Kampala.
Abuja, Nigeria sees a spike in abductions and killing of residents by bandits. Zambia grapples with child marriages as some girls defy the practice. Guinea's military junta arrests several journalists protesting media restrictions.
The press union decided to protest against the restriction of the media and respect for press freedom. And this morning, the soldiers, police and gendarmes came to prevent their movements.
And the U.S. admits Houthis are undeterred despite repeated U.S. strikes. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's polls at the African Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye says Ugandan security forces have put he and other opposition leaders under house arrest. Another opposition leader, Robert Chakulai, also popularly known as Bobi Wine, told reporters on Thursday in Kampala that he had also been put under house arrest. The opposition had called for demonstrations on Thursday to raise awareness about poor roads in Uganda and a demand for the whereabouts of allegedly missing opposition supporters. This, as Uganda hosts the Non-Aligned Movement Summit today, Friday. The police say the protest was intended to tarnish the country's image. Dr. Besigye is a four-time presidential candidate and currently the leader of the People's Front for Transition. He tells me it was imprudent for the Non-Aligned Movement to choose Uganda as a host, a country whose leader, he says, is abusing the rights of its citizens.
I could not get out of my home. My home is still surrounded up to now by police. So has been the homes of the Honorable Kyagulanyi Bobowine and the Lord Mayor of Kampala. They too had their homes barricaded and couldn't get out. But nonetheless, the protest went on. It was mainly focused on shining a torch on the terrible roads, especially in the central areas of Kampala and surroundings.
You say you are not allowed to leave your home. Did the police prevent you from leaving your home? And if so, did they tell you why?
Prevented, yes. In fact, right at my door, the main gate that leads out of my house is parked a huge police truck. And at smaller exits, there are heavy deployments of the police and military police. And I, of course, tried to get out of home, and they couldn't budge. I inquired as to what they were all about and whether they knew they were breaking the law and the constitution by doing what they were doing. They were absolutely mum. Nobody replied to me. So up to now, I haven't heard from anybody in the police as to why they are doing what they are doing. But like I said, this is not something new. The violation of our rights with impunity is something that has become now more or less the routine, and is indeed at the heart of why we have to continue asserting our will and protesting the injustices that we face.
We haven't been able to reach the police, but the police have said that they were not going to allow you to protest because your protests have always been violent.
Well, very clearly not supported by the slightest iota of evidence. All our protests, first of all, in the construct, in the messaging and in practice, have been peaceful. None of our people has ever carried any weapon or anything that can be used in violence. And indeed, whatever protests we have engaged in would be peaceful, and the breach of peace would come from the police. Sometimes in retaliation, some people throw stones, but this is always in response to the unjustified, brutal attack that the police undertakes on the population.
Dr. Besigye, as you know, the Noiland Summit is taking place in Kampala, Uganda. Why don't you wait until after the summit? Because one of the things I think the police have said is that you want to have this protest just to embarrass the government.
Well, first of all, no summit should deprive citizens of their rights. And indeed, Uganda is a very, very welcoming country. Our people are some of the most generous hosts you can ever find anywhere. But I think that our guests should also have exercised the prudence in choosing their destination, because there is no doubt that the non-aligned movement, which was set up on the platform of freedom in the world, of pushing back against colonialism, against imperial power and the abuse, they chose this time to be hosted by a sit-tight dictator who is denying freedoms from his own population. So I think, first of all, it was grossly imprudent for the non-aligned movement to choose one who is abusing and denying the rights of his own citizens.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is a Ugandan opposition leader. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. Guinea's military junta on Thursday arrested several journalists who tried to hold a protest to denounce the military's treatment of the media. The military has removed several popular private television and radio stations from the air and restricted internet connections, citing national security threats. Dauda Mohamed Kamara is the editor-in-chief of Espace FM. He tells me the authorities arrested a total of 9 journalists on Thursday.
Yes, it's true. As you know, it has been more than 2 months today since the transitional authorities decided to restrict access to the media, jam radio channels and block televisions in the Canal Plus package. The press union decided to protest against the restriction of the media and respect for press freedom. And this morning, they decided to get together at the press house at Minier. Is there the soldiers, police, and gendarmes came to prevent their movements. No argument. They just said that because the authorities said that there is no movement, so they prevent the movements.
The decision by the journalists to protest, I think, stemmed from restrictions on internet and the banning of some radio and television stations. Can you tell us, how is the internet situation? Has it improved?
The internet situation is always bad, because still people using VPN to get connects, and the websites and information websites are also in the same situation. The radios and the televisions, as I told you, they are also always on the same situation. As for today, all the programs broadcasting from the radio stations were blocked by the government, and we don't know how they try to do it, but when you take Espace, you take film, you take any other radio, just 2 musics playing, the music that's taking part enough of our soldiers, as we used to eat, and when the country is in danger, but no program was seriously going on. There was just music playing on the radios.
We hear that the authorities have arrested some journalists. Who are some of the journalists that you know were arrested?
As I speak to you, there are nearly 10 journalists arrested, 9 exactly. We have Ibrahim Afula Mori Bari. We also have Jiwa Ba. We have Lai Madi Kuyate for Evasion. And so Nabi Lai Kamara for Juma Media. There are 9 altogether.
Dauda Mohamed Kamara is the editor-in-chief at Espace FM. He was speaking with us from the Guinean capital, Conakry. Residents of Abuja, Nigeria, have been on edge because of widespread insecurity around the outskirts of the city, with frequent and indiscriminate killings and kidnappings. Our reporter in Abuja has more.
The escalating risk of kidnapping in Abuja has instilled fear in many residents, particularly those who usually commute at night or reside in perceived high-risk areas. The capital city, once considered relatively immune to the widespread security challenges in other parts of the country, is now grappling with an escalating wave of crime, particularly kidnappings. One resident, Usiodamewen Victorson, narrated a near-miss experience of his friend in Kushibuyo community on the city's outskirts.
People are living there. It has become a soft target for kidnappers. Every other day they are taking people. My friend who lives there, who I went to see, in fact, I went there to see him after there was an attempt to kidnap him, but he managed to escape. The other man that was kidnapped, that was not as lucky as my friend, he died after 2 days when he
was rescued.
Ben Atta is a public servant living in Abuja who laments the surge in insecurity.
There is need for the government to take drastic measures to nip this in the bud. Otherwise, the Abuja that we used to know, that has a very good investment climate where people come to do their businesses and other activities, to take a new turn, because people will feel very insecure and may not want to come to the city again.
The killings and kidnappings have left families and individuals in despair. 19 people were abducted from the Shagwari estate in the Buari Area Council of the Federal Capital Territory in early January. David Okoro is the Chief Security Strategist International at the Institute for Security and Governance Studies in Abuja. He says if proactive steps are not taken, the kidnappings will spread into the city center.
We do have a problem because kidnapping any part of Nigeria happens is a big problem, particularly when innocent people are taken and then they are taken to captivity and then negotiations start as if they are commodities. It's a big problem, and this has increased over time.
The kidnappers have recently killed 4 hostages, including a university student and a 13-year-old girl. President Bola Tinubu says his administration is committed to ensuring that the security situation is brought under control. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 19th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. According to the United Nations, about 1.7 million Zambians under the age of 18 are married, and more than 400,000 were 15 or younger when they got married. Kathy Short in Lusaka reports on attempts to end child marriage.
19-year-old Natalia Tembo was rescued from child marriage by her mother after she got pregnant in ninth grade. Her father set up the marriage but has since passed away. Upon his death, Natalia's mother was able to remove her from the marriage and enroll her back in school. She says she's happy to go back to school, although she feels different among her friends because she has a child. 30-year-old Landa Sodala Mulima advocates against child marriages. She ran away at age 15 when her uncle tried to arrange a marriage for her.
I went to Zambia College of Pensions and Insurance. I studied insurance, and I'm working with Madison Life Insurance. So if I was married when I was much younger, I was not going to know the worthy or the true meaning of education. I'm able to work. I'm able to buy anything that I want because I went back to school.
Barnabas Mwanza is the child protection specialist at UNICEF, one of the UN agencies working to reduce child marriages in Zambia. Child marriage is a formal or informal union involving a person under 18. Most countries view it as a violation of international rights. Recently, Zambia passed a law called the Children's Code Act. One of its provisions is a prohibition on child marriages, and since its passage, the Zambian non-profit Families Are Nations says 1,000 child brides have been withdrawn from their marriages and taken back to school. The group also says that child marriage rates have declined in the past year. Angela Chomba Kawandami is a permanent secretary at the Ministry of Community Development and Social Services.
The government has enacted the Children's Code Act No. 12 of 2022. This ensures the protection and well-being of children in Zambia.
But Zambia, in effect, has two legal systems. One system is based on English law, and the other customary laws, which are based on the different traditions of Zambia's 73 ethnic groups. While Zambian law sets the minimum age for marriage at 21 years, some customary laws allow child marriage with parental consent starting at the age of puberty. To solve the problem, the government recently introduced a bill in Parliament that would supersede customary law and make all child marriages illegal and punishable in court. Currently, a child in Zambia is legally defined as any person below the age of 16. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Another day, another round of U.S. strikes targeting Houthi missiles before they can be fired at ships transiting the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. But despite successfully taking out the threat, U.S. officials say the Iranian-backed terror group is showing no signs of giving up. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden has the latest from the Pentagon.
At a funeral for Houthi fighters killed in recent U.S. strikes, calls of defiance from mourners. They are alive with God, one man says, adding the Houthis will fight until the last drop of blood. At the White House Thursday, U.S. President Joe Biden admitted to reporters repeated U.S. strikes are not serving as deterrents.
When you say working, are they stopping the Houthis? No. Are they going to continue? Yes.
U.S. defense officials agree, but say there's value in the strikes.
You've seen that we've been able to degrade and severely disrupt and destroy a significant number of their capabilities.
Pentagon Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh says that while the U.S. does not seek war, it is prepared to keep hitting the Houthis as long as attacks on shipping continue.
But it is up to them. At what expense do they want to continue to go down this path?
U.S. officials have declined to share any detailed assessments of just how much firepower the Houthis have lost in the week since the first strikes rained down on their territory in Yemen. But a former commander of U.S. forces in the Middle East tells VOA, eventually the Houthis will feel some pain.
It's important for people to appreciate that this is a process.
Retired General Joseph Votel.
I think that we will continue to take action as we deem necessary to diminish the capabilities of the Houthis to launch these attacks. And I do think that is the principal purpose of these strikes.
Jeff Selden, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is planning to visit four African countries as the Biden administration tries to keep its eyes on all corners of the world while being consumed by a crisis in Ukraine, the Middle East, and the Red Sea. According to the Associated Press, the State Department announced on Thursday that Blinken will go to Cape Verde, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and Angola starting Sunday for talks focused on regional security, conflict prevention, democracy promotion, and trade. Nigeria is West Africa's regional heavyweight and plays a major role in security issues, especially those involving Islamic extremist violence in the Sahel, the vast arid expanse south of the Sahara Desert. Blinken's Africa trip comes as the United States is increasingly nervous about its relationships on the continent, particularly after coups last year in Niger, Gabon, and escalating unrest in Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. A donkey caught carrying a suspected improvised bomb blew up at a checkpoint on the Kenya-Somalia border on Thursday, killing one Kenyan police officer and critically wounding four others. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Ivory Coast at the African Cup of Nations. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport here in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire, where the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations second round matches in the group stages got on the way on Thursday with the early kickoff between Equatorial Guinea and Guinea-Bissau. It was Emilio Nsue who scored a hat-trick as Equatorial Guinea took a giant step towards the knockout stage with a 4-2 win over Guinea-Bissau. Nsue, at 34 years of age, became the oldest player to score a hat-trick at the tournament, which is in its 34th edition and the first in 16 years. Morocco's Soufiane Aloudi last managed the feat for Morocco in January 2008. The result sends Equatorial Guinea top of Group A on 4 points. In the second game of the day, William Troost-Ekong's second-half penalty was enough for Nigeria to jolt their campaign into life with a 1-0 win over host nation Ivory Coast. Goal scorer William Troost-Ekong speaks of a victory against the host nation.
Today, we won our duels. We look like a real team. We fought together. We suffered some difficult moments as well. But in the end, I think that's how it showed.
Ivorian captain Sege Aurera told Daybreak Africa Sports that even though his team lost against Nigeria, they had one of their best game in the tournament so far.
Yeah, I think tonight we played the best game on the pitch. So we are lucky with the penalty, but yeah, I think we give us to something tonight. But yeah, we have one more game, so we need to stay focused and go to win.
The win saw the Super Eagles climbed up to the second spot on the group standings, level on points with leaders Equatorial Guinea, and they will now battle it out with Guinea-Bissau on the 22nd of January as they look to book their spot in the round of 16. The last game for the day on Thursday saw Egypt lose Mohamed Salah to injury before coming from behind twice to draw 2-2 with Ghana Black Stars in their potentially decisive Africa Cup of Nations match. Mohamed Kudus scored both goals for Ghana, but the Black Stars were let down by defensive mistakes as Omar Mamouche and Mustafa Mohamed capitalized to dent the four-time champions' hopes of making their knockout stage. Kudus, after the match, said Ghana deserved more.
As an attacking player, you want your goals to reflect on the results, but we got the points today. I felt we deserved more because the goals they scored was some silly mistakes from us, which we need to learn from. And we put this game aside and then we focus on the next game. We knew Egypt was a good side, so we came with.
And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, January 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning.
Greetings. This is VOA's Sonny Young. Brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and voaafrica.com. It's the sunny side of sports